Okay, so Dhamma talk for tonight. I don't have a clue what I'm going to talk about, but I'll just make it up as I go along. So what is it? So next to me, he's I could say he's a good friend of mine, and he's been helping me out for the last 3 months. To we're finishing up with the renovation at Stocker Road, so we try to like DIY everything ourselves. So when you go there, don't complain about the bad workmanship. It's not that bad. It's pretty good actually. So yeah, he's been helping me out, and it's kind of interesting just to. Because I'm there every day, I don't really see the amount of work that goes into it. I just see what I see now. So this morning, we were just going through the old photos and just flicking through them on the computer and just seeing how much work we've done since the beginning. Like at the beginning, it was just a brick shed. So you can imagine how much work had to go into it. To bring it up to like Australian code for people to live in. So just single brick wall and a steel roof on the top. And just going through the photos and the amount of work that we had to do, like putting in the insulation and the plasterboard and painting it and doing the tiling and all that kind of stuff. It's been taking quite a bit of time. I think we started we started in April last year. So now it's January was what, 6, 8, 6, 7 months or something like that. And we've just been there working a lot of hours. And so there's only been three things that I've been doing, I think, over the past 6 months. I've been living in Gosnells, working at Stocker Road, and going to Bunnings. So you probably see me there in like Armidale or Mannington Bunnings. Yeah. So, but it's kind of interesting. It's sort of like, because we're trying to give a Dhamma talk and trying to teach people, just give them a bit of clarity on like how the process works, and you can sort of compare it to like having a project and starting from the beginning. And you always have to start somewhere. And at the end of the day, you finish it and then you can move in. But what I've noticed is like with building something, it's not like getting the plasterboard done or getting the tiling done or the kitchen put in. It's just every job is like a little job that you do. Like when you're tiling, you're mixing the mortar. So that's a job, you mix the mortar. Or when you're cutting a miter, when you're cutting a miter on a tile, so you're just cutting that miter like on a 45 degree angle so you can fit it in nicely. That's just one little job. Or you're just hitting in a nail or cutting a hole in the brick wall. They're just little things that you do to get to a point. Path of Buddhism or spirituality, or trying to get yourself from point A to point B in terms of like human development, creating wholesome states of mind. It just starts off with like the little things you do, like every day. Like when you wake up, how are you thinking? What are you doing in the afternoon or in the evening? Whatever it may be. I mean, just whatever instructions you may like listening to, whether it's this monk or that monk or, well, whatever, you just put it into play every day. It may not seem like anything. It's like, What's the big deal of mixing mortar for the tiles or shooting a nail gun into the timber? It's just one little thing. But then at the end of the day, when you look back, you can see that you've made something. And in the same way, you know, with the spiritual path, yeah, just one act of kindness or a kind word said to somebody. Sometimes you may think it's not going to have a huge impact on your life. And you may think, oh, maybe it's not worthwhile. But if you do it over a period of time, and, you know, when you step back and look, you can actually see, hey, you're actually changing your life, you know, for the better. Yeah? So you change your life for the better, which is a good thing, right? And yeah, that's all it is, really. Just these little things. Like, I remember sort of the Mother Teresa. Like, I can imagine, I haven't read up much about it, but you can sort of think about what she was doing in India, just helping out all these people who were in need. And that was her mission, to just give herself to the people that needed it the most, the people who are sick, didn't have clothes to wear. And she was just nursing them into, like, back to good health. And after a while, she got this like reputation of just doing great things, like great things, you know, being like this amazing woman, right? It's like, oh, but she's just a human being, just like us. She had to start from somewhere. And what she said, like, you don't do great things in life, but you do small things, like, with great amounts of love. It's sort of like, you know, it's something as simple as that. It's like, you know what I mean? It's like what you're doing on a day-to-day basis will eventually get you to the place where you want to be. And it goes, it's the same with the meditation practice. You know how we sat here for half an hour, and you're probably thinking, this isn't working, the monks are phony, send them back to Gosnells. It's always tough at the beginning, right? Because I think at the beginning is you can't really see through the clouds which are in your mind. They're like blocking the potential of whatever peace and stillness to arise. And sometimes people don't even try, and some people just give up. And you know, from my own experience, when I first started to meditate, I probably had the same problem as you guys. Yeah, I was working in the kitchen, slaving away, cooking steaks, and eating them as well, and not sharing them with anybody. No. And then I was like really into Buddhism. Like, whenever you come across something new, something special, you want to give it 100%. So I would do a split shift. I'd go in there in the morning, work, and then I would have the afternoon off. I think it was 3 to 5. So I would walk home, and I had a couch in my room, and I would just sit and meditate, because I was into it and I wanted to improve myself, you know, things like that. And I always found it really, really difficult to do it. But I persisted, and I was patient. And it got to the point where I started to realize that they're just sitting down peacefully or quietly. You know, you may drift off into a bit of sleep. You may stay awake, but the mind is foggy, it's tired. You're just thinking about stuff. But then after the whole experience, when I got up, I just felt a little bit better. You know, even though I didn't understand what peace was, even though I couldn't even watch my breath, but for some reason, just being able to sit down and just being there had some sort of effect on the mind and the body. And because of that, I just wanted to go back and just do it some more and more and more. And I think that's the type of reflection that we need as human beings, is to see how our world affects us. It's like I said before, you know, like when you meditate, you can understand that you're getting more peace and stillness in your mind because you're sitting in meditation. So in the same way, you know, when you want to develop this spiritual path, you understand that you got to be a little bit more kinder, a little bit more generous. Don't try to get angry. You know, things like that that you hear time and time again. But yeah, you try to do that, but then see what's the result of those actions, and understand which ones to go back to. Yeah. Like, in a sense, like Buddhist monks have a code. We can't get angry. You got to speak correctly. You've got to be kind. That kind of thing. You know, you go to a monastery, you don't see the monks fighting. You don't see them arguing. And there's a reason for it, because it's been learned for many years that these kind of emotions and things, they're not good for the mind. And then when you actually get angry, you know, how does it feel? And how does it make the other person feel? So you reflect and think about it. And then you say to yourself, is it really worth going back there and doing it again? Do you really want to hurt that person, or do you want to hurt yourself? And if you're a sensible person, obviously no, right? And then you do the same thing. It's not everybody's born generous. Not everybody's born kind. But sometimes when you come across, when you're coming here or you're listening to it on the internet, you're probably thinking to yourself, I'm probably thinking that you want to actually put in some sort of effort into your life to make it better. So just try, you know, go and do something nice to your mum. How hard is it to do nice things to your mother? I shouldn't joke about it, but and you know, see how that feels. And if it does lead to better things in your life, it's something that you have to sort of put effort to return to and make much of it. It's always like in life, I think everything you have to build things up. You're not given things on a silver platter. It takes a little bit of effort. It takes a little bit of time. It takes a little bit of patience. But if you work at it, and if you have some sort of direction, then you can, in a sense, make things better, fix up your life. And it's just a thought that sort of came across my mind earlier on. And as I reflect on my life as a monk, you know, what's the reason why I became a monk? And I think one of the reasons why I became a monk is to be able to just find a little bit more peace in my life. Putting in myself in a situation where more peace and contentment can arise. And it's sort of like I'm trying to think of a way to sort of make it practical so you can put it into your everyday life. And so I only can talk about what I know, and that's talk about monks and talk about the monastery. so Like, in a sense, like, if you think about a monastic lifestyle, there's a lot of, like, we change our lives, we put on the robes, we keep all these rules. That's a part of it. But I think the biggest impact that it has on our life and on our mentality is the fact that we moved away from the world. We moved away from, like, having our own car, having our own house, families, things like that. In a sense, we made our lives just that little bit more simpler to be able to create that environment where it's easier to sort of sense peace and find peace. Because the less things which are pulling at you, like, you know, there's this thing in Buddhism called Mara. Mara is like the tempter. And so there's a story in there's a story from there's a story about the Buddha before he became enlightened. There's this like tempter that came along and tried to pull the Buddha away from his practice of meditation before he got enlightened. So this Mara fella wanted to stop him from becoming enlightened. So if he didn't become enlightened, then you won't have us monks here, you won't have Buddhism, yada yada yada. But the Buddha was resolved, and he just kept on practicing. And because he didn't buy into the temptations, then he was able to, you know, break through and become enlightened, and was able to teach monks, and monks were able to pass it down to the nuns, to the lay people through the books. And now we are fortunate enough to have Buddhism in our day and age, where I personally think that there are still really good monks and really good nuns out there, just being honest practitioners and just doing what they can to work on their minds and also share their experience to other people so it can help other people's lives. So in a sense, we, like I was saying earlier, just taking ourselves away from the world, it did really help just distance ourselves from everything out there to allow us to focus more on our minds. So it's a very simple lifestyle that we live that creates peace. And also, the other thing that I'm really grateful for is by the way Ajahn Brahm treated us as monks. I think he gave us the freedom to be ourselves. It's like sometimes you may think, oh yeah, I go visit a monastery, and because the monks are wearing brown, they're probably all the same. They talk the same, they walk the same, they drink the same, they smell the same. But we're not. And I think that's one of the things that Ajahn Brahm has allowed his monks is to be themselves. You know what I mean? He gave the monks the freedom to be themselves in a sense where you can imagine if you go to a monastery, you have a teacher there telling you what to do. Like in the army, you got to walk this way, you got to talk this way, that kind of thing. And you may think, yeah, because we have all these rules that we have to keep as well. Like a whole ton of rules. And it's like, oh no, they're all the same because of this box that they get put into. And I think if you get put into a box or get told what to do, that takes away a lot of your, that takes away the, that takes away the opportunity for peace to arise. Being told what to do by people, being controlled, being criticized, all that kind of thing takes away our potential to live a more peaceful life. And I think that's the one thing. I don't know if Ajahn Brahm did it on purpose. he understands. Yeah, he understands that you can't control people. You have to let them be who they are. And I think that allowed us as people to be able to find peace more easily. Because, yeah, we may be wearing the same brown clothes and that may indicate that the path is the same for the monks. But the truth is, the path is how we practice is different for everybody. It's different for everybody. Like, it's like, what would the Buddha say? He would say, like, all these streams, like, you can imagine, right? Imagine a map, and you got all these lines, right? And it's leading to one big river, and that's leading to the ocean. And all these lines and cracks that you can see in the map, they're like the streams that run through the land. And each of those streams, each of those lines, each of those cracks, whatever you may want to call them, they indicate an individual's path to, you know, wherever they want to go to. In this case, since you're here, we want to become enlightened, right? Or we want to find some peace or whatever, that kind of thing. So all these cracks and stuff, that's what it means. Everybody has their individual path, their unique way. And I think, like, personally, everybody's unique, everybody's different. So there's no reason to criticize other people for who they are and how they practice, you know? And so, yeah, all these different, like, they all lead to peace, to the main river and to the ocean. And that's, in a sense, like, just giving you that, like, that freedom to just move around your own world in your own way, at your own pace, in your own time. I think that brings people a sense of peace, a sense of, like being grounded. And also the other thing I was saying, like, just like living a more simpler lifestyle. I don't know what, like, I can't really say that because my lifestyle has been quite busy over the past, I've taken this role of leading a community, and it's actually sometimes it can be a little bit too much and a little bit too busy. But the one thing that I found out is, because just being a monk for a long, long time, you can always go back to the places of stillness and calm and, like, re-energize yourself so you're able to take on the world again. But I think, like, just having a simple lifestyle and having less distractions will give you that opportunity for more peace and stillness to arise in your daily life. And I think people work too hard, they do too much, and what that does is that drains away the energies of the mind. And when your energies are low, you get grumpy, you say the wrong things, you're not happy anymore. But where, and that all comes from, I think, a life which is too busy, you're doing too much. But then when you think about how do you create a less busier life to be able to regain the energies of the mind, when the mind is just a little bit more brighter, it's more clearer. And I think that way it actually brings more benefit to your mental states and to your physical health. And that's done by just not being too busy, just calming down a bit, taking things out of your schedule, giving time to yourself so your mind can, you know, relax a bit more. It can regain its energy. And it's always nice to be able to give yourself that time, just to get away from it all, to re-energize, and, you know. So, yeah, got nothing else to say now, but I'll think of something. I was going to say something, but I completely forgot. It's how embarrassing. It is. Nah, it's all right. I was going to say something, but I forgot. Okay. Oh no, I'm in trouble now. okay, so what was it? It's creating peace in your life. What else? What else can I talk about? Creating peace in your life. It's just like sometimes you think of just weird stories and stuff. It's like when I was thinking about giving this talk, I wasn't really thinking about much. It's like all these ideas just coming through my head, and I go, oh yeah, I might tell that story, I might not. But you sort of want to be able to reach people and give them a message. And there's this thing that I read ages ago. It's kind of funny, you know. It's like before I started teaching as a young monk, you sort of read things so maybe one day you can teach people about it. But that was like 10 years ago. And now that I've got to teach, I just don't do it, eh? It's a bad habit that I've fallen into. But I still try to sit here and try to say something. And anyway, it was like a story that I wanted to share 10 years ago, but I guess I'll share it now. And I read it in the Reader's Digest, and it's just a nice, touching story about just the kindness of people. So there was this kid. The mother drove him up. I don't know how old he was. I guess he's little enough to be able to go into the shop and buy the things that he needed for school. So the mother pulled up. I guess she was angry, shouting at him or whatever. She wasn't in a good mood. And she handed the boy some money. And it wasn't enough. And she said to the boy, whatever you need in that shop for school, get everything you need with the money that I give you. So the mum was being kind of nasty to her son. And the son knew that with the money that she gave him, he's not able to buy what he needed for school. But the mother pushed him out of the car, but forced him out of the car. He had nothing to do. He says, she probably said, oh, I'm not going to pick you up until you get your things. So then he walked into the shop. And the little boy didn't know what to do, didn't have enough money to buy what he wanted. So he just sat down in the shop, disorientated, sad, about to cry. But so this is like a story of how humans can like help one another and find opportunities to give. So then as this was happening, one of the workers, they were looking out the window, and they saw what happened. They saw a mother in the car yelling at the child, a child being disorientated, scared, not knowing what to do. They saw all that happening. They knew there was a problem. So then this kind person walks up to this little boy and starts talking to him. And then he said, oh, you know, mom's not being very nice. She just gave me a little bit of money, and she wants to get me all these things on this list. And she told me that I can't go back until I get it. So the worker saw what happened, and she felt that she wanted to do something for this boy. Yeah? For this boy. And then, so then she just went around to her other co-workers and just told him what happened. And all the co-workers, they got all the money and put it together, and they bought the boy what he needed. The pencils, the pads, you know, whatever. And, you know, they gave it to the little boy, and the boy's really happy, I think. He felt better, and then he just went home, and, you know, that's the end of the story. It's kind of nice, you know, I kind of read it, and I thought, yeah, you know, that's a nice story to be able to see, you know, people helping out in this kind of manner, to be able to give like that. And yeah, and just, you know, giving, like, it's like, you know, we come here to learn a bit about spirituality. There's like the giving side of it, there's like the letting go. A lot of people talk about the letting go, mindfulness, wisdom. It's all about the practice. It's like what comes to mind is like one of my one of the teachers that I like very much is Ajahn Chah. And he's the one that's sitting beside me, behind me. He's watching over me, making sure I don't say anything wrong. Otherwise, I get in trouble. Anyway, I don't think he gets talked about that much in this place, but he's the one that taught Ajahn Brahm. You probably know his story, but he traveled all the way to Thailand to, like, pursue a monk's life. And then what happened was he ordained in a city monastery. You know, where they wear the bright yellow and they're in the city and it's not really foresty or anything like that because it's in the city. And he wanted to, so he didn't really know where to go, and it's just all by word of mouth that Ajahn Chah sort of came on his radar. And then he was able to find his way into the forest of Wat Pa Phong. And it's like amazingly simple lifestyle, if you think about it. Like in a sense, like monastic Buddhism has modernized over the years. It's like now we have access to more things. But back in those days, it was really simple. The only fun that you could have as a monk, it's probably a sweet cup of tea. Not the nails. Nowadays, you get jokes from Ajahn Brahm. It's changed over the years. And I can just imagine, I was reminiscing and I was thinking, yeah, you know, they had it tough. But it's kind of interesting, you know, we find ways to survive and make the most out of it. And it's just like the nature of the human mind. We're always looking for some sort of satisfaction. Like, we yearn for it. It's just our natural instinct to go out there and find it. But I think that's normal. That's, everybody is allowed to do that. But I think what Buddhism does, in a sense, which is helps you become more grounded and more accepting in whatever happens in life. Yeah, this ability to accept things, like the good and the bad, the ups and downs. So when the tough times come, you can just be with them and not get overly worked up and overly upset. There's this little saying in the monastery where we call it like double dukkha. Like, dukkha is a word that you hear a lot in Buddhism. It means like suffering or tough times or whatever. And double dukkha is the attitude that you have towards that suffering. So you can feel grumpy about feeling grumpy, or feeling guilty about being grumpy. So the idea of like being able to accept things is to just take away that attitude towards whatever you have. Take that negative attitude towards whatever's happening now. So instead of being so whatever happens, you just accept it. You just accept it. And with what kind of mind state do you accept it with? You just accept it with a mind state where you just allow it to be. You know, when I was trying to teach you how to meditate earlier on, I'm pretty sure you had all sorts of things going through your mind. But it's like always try to point people to the way of looking at things. It's like you look at your mind from a calm point of view. Like if your mind is going crazy, like going mad, you know, how are you looking at it? Are you adding more madness onto it? Or are you just looking at it calmly? And we always like think that is whatever you add onto the problem that you had makes it worse. That's why we call it double dukkha, double suffering, double trouble. So it's whatever you add to it, it makes it worse. And it's always like, it's like the way we've been taught is like, if you want it to subside quicker, right? You want these things to disappear, then you look onto it with more of like a calm mind, more of a neutral mind, accepting it for what it is. It may still be there, but it'll disappear a lot quicker. Because you're not adding, it's like you're not adding anything onto the fire. We like to talk about these troubles in our lives as burning fires sometime. And a raging fire, you can't really stop it. It's sort of like, yeah, it's kind of interesting. It's sort of like the wiser you become, the more tools you have to put out that fire. So how wise are we? Do we have enough wisdom to be able to carry a hose and put out that fire quickly? It's kind of true, I think. It's like if you think about Ajahn Brahm or, you know, the great monks, they probably have a big water hose to put out their fire quite quickly. A problem comes out, they pull out that hose and just put it out, bang, disappear. But for us, we probably don't have a hose, right? We just have a bit of patience and we just have an attitude towards whatever fire that we're seeing. And what do all fires do after a while? They just die down. They disappear. They vanish. And that's always, like, we always get reminded about that. If you leave it alone, it will disappear. If you add on to it, you add more sticks, you add more fires, or add more sticks, add more fuel, it'll just get worse and worse and worse. And in a sense, you know, no real wisdom can arise from that. But if you wait and you watch, just quietly, and you can see the problem sort of resolving itself in front of your eyes, and you can understand this like wisdom there arising in front of you, knowing that, hey, there's other ways to overcome these difficulties. And in a sense, you know, you could say the water hose, the water hose in this idea that I'm trying to talk about is like the ability to let go, the ability to drop things. Now that was a big teaching, I think, in the way Ajahn Chah taught, was just looking at how heavy these things are, you know, these burdens that you're carrying around. It's like, is it worth holding on to? It will give like these practical teachings. It will be like you know, they're walking down it's like in Thailand. Thailand is hot, it's sweaty, the ground is flat, most of it's been farmed. What else? There's logs and stuff lying around. And the monks were just walking. I don't know where they were walking. There certainly wasn't a Bunnings back in those days, so I'm sure they go. Sorry, it's a bad joke, sorry. I'll be in the front of the line if that ever happens. So they're just walking maybe on Pindabat or something like that. So in the time of in Thailand, they would go on like Pindabat, and that's basically in the mornings. like really early, the monks will have just one meal a day, and they'll bring their bowls and they'll just walk to the village to collect food. And it was like a tradition that was that has been going on from the time of the Buddha, and it's continued in these like Asian countries. So the monks will walk in Pindabat every morning with their bowls, and they'll walk really quietly and peacefully to collect their food. And the teacher would always go along with them. And at this point in time, there was like a log blocking the way. And then Ajahn Chah would like, you know, he would just tell two monks, just go over there and pick up the logs. And there's a big log, you know, really heavy. So they picked it up. And then Ajahn Chah would say, is the log heavy? Yes, they would say. They would say, yes, it's heavy. And then they threw the log off to the side. And then Ajahn Chah said, is the log heavy now? And they says, no, the log is not heavy. So they threw it away and it became light. Now that's the point that we was trying to get across, is that if you hold on to things, they become heavy. If you throw things away, they become light. And that's just a simple teaching that we can just like put into practice. And you won't get it straight away, but it's sort of like a muscle in the mind. We also like to talk about muscles and Buddhism and bring them together. And it's like muscles in the mind where you go to the gym. You go to the gym if you want to build up your bicep or get stronger. You have to work at it and build it up, and it gets stronger over time. And it's sort of like the muscles of like letting go, the muscles of the mind. It's something that you can focus on. And the more you do it, the better you become at it, and the easier it is for you to let go. So you just have to keep on working at it time and time again. But the point that I was trying to get to was when we talk about the spiritual practice, it's just not only one thing that we do to make it work, but it's just like a combination of things that come together. It's like Ajahn Chah said, you know, if he compared it to like a tripod. You have a tripod, it has three legs. It's like a very simple simile, but it does make sense. It's just three legs, and the three legs, they represent virtue. Virtue is the three core practices of a Buddhist. You have the virtue, you have the you have the wisdom, and then you have the meditation, the samadhi, and all those three things have to work together to be able to make something magical happen. And he compared it to a tripod, and the tripod is like three legs, right? The one leg represents wisdom, the one leg represents meditation, and the other one's virtue, just the goodness that you have in your heart and the kindness that you try to develop. But if one of those legs are missing, the tripod falls down. It doesn't work. And this is what Ajahn Chah was saying, and it did make sense, you know. If one of them is missing, then you can't really, you know, take off and make it happen. You need to have three of them like working together to be able to, you know, build something up, make something happen, build something up, make something happen, turn a horse stables into a house. And that's all it is, really. Yeah, just simple things you can do every day. You trip over. Like, we trip over, monks trip over, nuns trip over. No one's perfect. But you just get back up and just try again. It's just like with this tiling job that I'm doing, right? I've done it already, but If it's not right, I'll knock it back down. No, I don't knock the whole thing down, but the grout lines weren't lining up. So I ripped down the side of the tiles so I can replace them, so the grout lines would kind of line up, kind of thing, you know. So they're sort of like, you know, in life, things don't work out. You knock them down or you get back up, you just start again. You fail, you start again, you create problems. That's normal. That's life. You don't have to be perfect, you know what I mean? But you can just try and just try, and then eventually something will happen. See, like I tried to give a talk tonight and it happened. So yeah, you know, so that's good. Okay, enough. Very good. Okay. So this is from any. So we answer the questions on the iPad first, and then from the crowd. Yeah, is that how it works? Okay. So a person from Tokyo. I am an expressive person, and I have a hard time keeping my face calm. Every time, everything shows up on my face before my mind even becomes aware of it. Is it a problem? No, it's not a problem. It's like the problem is with the other person. If the person's finding fault with you, that's their problem. People should be more like Buddhists these days, right? And just accept people for who they are. So it's not your problem. Just be who you are. That should be fine. Okay. Next question. Dreams a form of nimitta. So nimitta is like this, like a stage that you get into in meditation. So like the deeper you go, like we call these things called nimittas. That's a sign that your meditation is becoming more calm, more peaceful, and just getting deeper. So dreams form of nimittas. I don't think so. Also, when I receive teachings from someone like Ajahn Chah in a lucid dream, is it in a lucid dream? Is it actually coming from him? Probably not. I don't think so. It's just a dream. It could be anything, you really. I'm not a dream. Yeah, sometimes yeah, you just dream about things that you think about the day. I wouldn't take it too seriously. Yeah, that's what I would say. Just there's nothing really special going on. Just don't take it too seriously. Let go and move on. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Guys, sorry. Another dream question. What role do dreams play in the Eightfold Path? When lucid in a dream, I often ask for teachings from Ajahn Chah or the Buddha. I wonder if it's really him. I doubt it. Yeah, I doubt it. Yeah. To be honest, I doubt it. Yeah. It's better to just go to a monastery, sit and meditate, find more stillness and peace, and then the answers, more clarity will come to your mind, and you can understand these things for yourself, whether it's real or not. It's like when people have muddled minds, they can't really see what's going on. It creates problems, but if you have a clear mind, it doesn't have to be super clear, but you can sort of make sense of it all, you know? Yeah. How do you meditate when you cannot breathe well due to a lung operation and on top pain due to a pulled vertebrae? So this person sounds like they're in a lot of pain. Body is weak and out of balance. How do you find peace? That's a tough one. I remember when I had really bad sciatica, yeah, and it was terrible. And I was like, and it's unbearable. So I can understand where you're coming from. Sometimes it's just too hard to really do anything. Maybe complain a little, just let go of that. just you can just bear with it, I guess, and trying to make peace, be kind, be gentle in these kinds of situations, and just understand that it's just so painful during those times that you can't really, really find peace within that pain, I think. But if you have experienced that, if that pain is something which is has been there for a long time and you kind of get used to it, and your mind may be a little bit more like malleable in that kind of situation, then you may be able to start to develop peace. But when it's just full on pain that you to the point where your brain doesn't work, then yeah, there's really nothing you can do about it except for scream or something like that. And it's all right to scream. It's like, I was screaming, hey, I was like really getting upset over it, but never mind, it happens. Okay. Anything else? Any questions from the crowd? No? You're letting me off the hook? Okay, fantastic. We can finish now. Yeah, very good. We can just turn around and pay respects to the Buddha, the one who started it all.